Welcome to MoneyMD, where the money doctors are in the house. We're giving out prescriptions for better financial health and making smart decisions with your money. We give common sense solutions to your complex problems. And now, here are the doctors.
Well, Justin, this is our first time doing the podcast together. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right.
This is your third one. I guess you've done one with Matthew and Abby as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, awesome. So, it's a great time of the year. I love springtime. You have so many things going on. In addition to the pollen, March Madness, right? You got your brackets. You got to get your brackets in.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Yeah. I spent a little time this year. It's amazing how many upsets there are, and you can never pick. There's never been a perfect bracket.
Right.
It's not possible.
Not possible. Yeah, that's right. I've kept up with it a little bit this year. My Noles are not in the tournament this year, so it's been a little bit hard.
The Gamecocks are. As are the Tigers. I mean, give some props to the Tigers. I do have them losing in the first round.
Oh, good for you.
And the Gamecocks winning. So, fun time of the year. And then we've got Masters right around the corner, to get a buzz about that. So, you know, we've got a lot of things going on. It's a good time of the year. Hope everybody's doing well out there. And, you know, we have an interesting show lined up for today. We're going to start off with a topic that is optimistic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the news media, one of the things I think we all battle is the negative, constant beating of the drum by the news media. And so occasionally we'll find some positivity out there. And so this is a great discussion about what's right in the investing world. I mean, there are some things that are going on that are fantastic, and you don't really hear that very much in the news media. So I'm glad you're tuned in and listening out there, because we've got five really exciting things that are happening out there, which, you know, give folks optimism for the stock market. No one knows the direction of the market, obviously, but these are some positive things.
Yeah, that's right. And the second topic we're going to cover, kind of an unfortunate scenario in some cases that we see, you know, in the late summer, early fall, and that's natural disasters, at least in our area, you know, hurricanes. And are you prepared financially to recover from those? So a little bit of a shorter article. I'm sure we'll go a little bit more detail in the first one, but all good stuff.
Yeah, you also, I mean, you were born and raised in Perry, Florida, and they were just demolished by a hurricane back in, what was it,
August.
September?
Yeah, August. Late August. Hurricane Idalia?
Yeah.
Idalia? Yeah.
Probably category more wind 3. Wind damage, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, right. Not much of a surge or not where you were.
It was category 3 when it landed, about, you know, somewhere between 5 to 7 feet of surge. So still a big storm. Super familiar with the hurricanes in that area.
Yeah, a lot of damage there. So, by the way, I'm John Travis. I have an MBA in finance. I'm also a Dave Ramsey certified coach with over 32 years of experience in planning for both corporations and individuals.
Yeah, and I'm Justin Folsom. I'm also a financial advisor here at the firm and coming up on my 1 year mark.
That's right. Yeah, coming up quick. So we're excited to have you listening to us today. And you can find the podcast. It's up every Friday morning. You can go to moneymd.net to get that, or iTunes as well. And we also have a website, moneymd.net. We have some pretty good tools out there, some spreadsheets, some college information out there. We actually have a retirement plan that you can go in and run, some videos that we've done a couple of years ago. Also a Facebook page, MoneyMD. And if you go out there and check that out, we put the prescription of the week out there. We record that every week. We rotate amongst the advisors. And I think I'm up this week talking about the best ways to save for college. So go check that out. So we're going to start off here with the financial fact of the week. And this is interesting, just talking about electronic payments and cash. And there's a lot of concern about cryptocurrency and how that's going to be integrated into society, and then also the Federal Reserve having a digital currency. And the fact is that with mobile banking and electronic payments, you know, becoming more and more common, people are earning and spending money without even having to touch the physical currency. So the estimate is about 8% of the world's currency is cash, with the rest existing on a computer hard drive or in electronic bank accounts. And so when we talk to people about stock market going to zero, if the stock market ever went to zero, your cash in the bank is not going to be there. That's there's much bigger problems associated with it. You need to have some other tools, like a way to eat and find water and
protection.
Yeah. That's right. So, but 8% of the world's currency is cash and is being used, and 92% of it's electronic. So that is the fact of the week. And so we're going to start off here with talking about what's right in the world. And this comes from a group. It's called Capital Investors. And Jared France, who's an economist, Jeff Garcia, who's an investment analyst, and then Carl Kawaja, who's a portfolio manager for the Capital firm. And really, really interesting take, because there's so many negative things out there. There's a daily diet of negative news that even the most experienced investors can lose their conviction on the longer-term investment plans. And most of the time, bad news overshadows the favorable events. And, if you look at the U.S., at this point, it appears that we've avoided a recession. Inflation picture has certainly improved in 2023. But a lot of Americans are still downbeat about the economy and the markets. And you hear the negative news from Ukraine and the Mid East and the simmering U.S.-China tensions. And then, by the way, we have a presidential campaign that's going to be nasty and already is.
That's right.
And it's certainly understandable that investors may be anxious. But, there's a lot of positive trends across technology, healthcare, and other areas that are really transforming lives and driving the opportunity for companies and patient investors. And so here are five reasons to feel confident about the future. Obviously, it's never going to be a straight line up positive with everything, but these are real. These things are happening. And so the first one here is that the U.S. actually may be stronger than you think. And so investors spent much of 2023 bracing for a recession that never happened. And in the face of elevated inflation and rising interest rates, GDP, which was a measure of total economic output that's tracked by the U.S. Department of Commerce, expanded at 3.3% annualized in the fourth quarter. And so that was unexpected. And most people thought that we were going to be in a recession at that point. So the U.S. may be even stronger than we think.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things that we look at and that we talk about with clients, and something just to think about, is the American consumer sector. It remains strong. We saw that at the end of last year and into this year. And in January, the economy actually added, it says here, 353,000 jobs. Wages went up around 4.5% year over year. And that's not likely to slow. So moderating the inflation should also bolster, real income growth, particularly among the lower income workers, which is a good sign.
Yep.
So the U.S. housing market, as another talking point, appears to be recovering as we do see mortgage rates starting to ease or at least flatten a little bit for us here lately. And there are early signs that manufacturing is actually heating up and businesses are beginning to restock their inventories at this point. And we see here that the U.S. federal government has also committed $1.4 trillion, that's trillion with a T, for a capital project. So that's going to include construction of manufacturing facilities as the American people and companies seek to diversify, in those supply chains.
Yeah, and certainly the government is spending on transportation. I don't know about you, but gosh, everywhere I drive, there is construction.
That's right.
It's almost like the DOT has too many projects going on. But very, very strong. And the Federal Reserve's efforts to achieve a soft landing for the economy, bringing down inflation while maintaining growth, has been successful this far, and inflation remains above that 2% target. And it's unclear when the central bank may begin to lower rates, but they're expected to do so at some point. But this could be the groundwork for an extended period of economic expansion. Obviously, no one knows that, but that is that U.S. economy has been resilient and has been very strong. So that's a positive. Another positive, which I don't think anyone can grasp. I mean, I've heard some really smart people talk about this topic before. There's really no way to know how this is going to going to end on the positive standpoint, but the artificial intelligent productivity boom is just beginning. I mean, the introduction of Chat, GPT, and other artificial intelligence tools has garnered wide attention for the technology's potential to drive fast gains in productivity across industries, reducing cost and creating a lot of efficiencies for companies and consumers. And you know, a lot of times we overestimate the impact in the short term, but we underestimate it over time and over the long term. So the key for investors is really to distinguish between what's hype and what represents tangible investment opportunity. And that said, you know, a little more than a year ago, Chat GPT was released, and today it's really no longer a buzzword because it's being integrated by companies in healthcare and financial services and retail sectors, and they're starting to harness its potential to automate complex tasks and streamline workflow and accelerate technological advancement. So AI is a big, big deal, and we're starting to feel that, and we just don't know how big of a deal it is, but I've heard that it's being compared to the Industrial Revolution, you know, years and years and years ago. It's that groundbreaking.
Yeah, and it's not something that I think I fully understand yet. It is a very complex, you know, investment and invention, rather. But one of the examples that we see even with here with MasterCard is they're using AI to streamline things like recruiting processes and also detection of payment fraud, which we actually hear a lot about. Moving over to Amazon, they have long used AI for product listings, recommendations. I'm sure you've been browsing Amazon or Google and you see a recommendation for something you've talked about, and so they've been using that, but now they're actually using it at their physical locations. Which, side note, have you been to an Amazon store, an in-person store?
No, I have not.
There were some in Orlando. They're actually pretty cool. It's their top products online in a store.
I didn't even know they had stores.
Yeah, so
that's kind of cool.
They're using AI to enable their consumers there to take items and pay on the Amazon app, so that they don't have to sit in a checkout line.
Yeah.
So cool. So it's being adopted, you know, obviously on the retail side, but also in hospitals, medical providers using it to streamline documentation and other administrative tasks, helping to reduce the number of patient visits. That's always a good thing, that, you know, may require physicians' notes and addresses and, you know, staffing shortages. We hear all the things that are going on in the healthcare industry, and you know, I think AI is going to streamline a lot of that.
It is huge. It's going to be in the financial industry as well. We read articles how it's going to change our jobs. I don't think it'll replace us, but it will make it more efficient, certainly. So, AI is a big deal. Another one is more stocks are poised to join the market rally, and stocks really have defied investor expectations the last year and delivered a fantastic year. The S&P 500, which is a broad measure of U.S. stocks, and the international indexes were both up double digits last year. Fantastic years. But examples of investors who think they've missed the market rally may want to take a deeper look. I mean, there's something out there called the Magnificent Seven, and these groupings of stocks changed. They used to be called FANG. Right. And then Nifty 50 many, many years ago. But the Magnificent Seven, Apple, Meta, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Amazon, Alphabet, and Tesla accounted for a very large portion of the market's total return in 2023. In fact, if you look at the returns over the last couple of years, the other 493 companies in the S&P 500 were generally flat. So those seven stocks were picking up the low. Now, I will say in 2022, you know, those seven stocks were hammered. I mean, the volatility in those seven stocks is off the charts. So very, very risky strategy. We certainly own those type of stocks in the portfolio, but we're not betting the farm on those stocks. So observers can detect a similar pattern across international markets as well. The brighter economic backdrop in the U.S. is providing for tailwinds for corporate earnings across a broader range of companies. And in fact, Wall Street analysts expect earnings growth across major markets this year. And the stunning success that the Magnificent Seven have had, maybe it's been warranted. They've been in the cutting edge of AI and other innovations, but there's examples of innovators across all kind of markets and all kind of industries that are adopting these strategies and using this technology to grow their businesses. So in the U.S., like air conditioner maker Carrier Global has seen demand for its energy efficient systems soar amid record temperatures in regions around the world. Iris installation maker Kingspan has designed a synthetic siding panels to help improve the energy efficiency of buildings. And in Japan, SMC is a leader in factory automation components. So, I mean, basically what that's saying is, you know, the market's been carried by those seven stocks, and it looks to be broadening out to include more segments, mid-cap and small-cap and international and so forth. So being diversified is a good thing coming out of that conversation. So broader market participation is a positive. Number four on the list is emerging markets are emerging as global trade evolves. And two major developments in recent years prompted governments and companies to rethink the contours of global trade. Escalating tensions between the U.S. and China triggered tariffs and trade restrictions that adversely impacted the flow of goods around the world. And then this was certainly amplified by the pandemic back in 2020, which exposed serious vulnerabilities in supply chains as shutdowns and labor shortages led to bottlenecks and delays.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess what you're saying here is global trade isn't dead, right? It's just transforming. It's just the new era of these emerging markets. And to reduce the risk of overdependence on a single global supply chain, we see that governments and companies are developing more trade relationships. So many of them are more regional now than they have been. So increasingly, American companies have turned to even our neighbors over the border in Mexico as an alternative trade partner. So there are several reasons Mexico can be an appealing trade partner for us over in the U.S., but one of those is labor cost. They're attractive based on the China market and other major manufacturing regions that we've used in the past. So the country has a lot of natural resources. Its proximity is obviously very close to the U.S. And limits some of those logistic challenges that we have with other, you know, outside countries. The relationship also helps to boost the regional economy. Obviously, we're neighbors, and that would make sense.
Yeah, and in fact, Mexico recently surpassed China as the top trade partner with the U.S. I mean, that was surprising to hear that. And even as China's economy slows and its relations with the U.S. cool, infrastructure growth, improved government balance sheets, and global supply chain shifts are generating opportunity across other emerging markets, including India, as well as Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, and other economies. So, you know, emerging markets, you know, they're an important piece of the portfolio. We have some of these countries and some of these companies represented in the portfolio as a part of the diversification. So there's some positive things going on in the emerging markets. And the last thing here is ongoing breakthroughs in healthcare. And so pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies really have entered a golden age of drug discovery in the last few years. They've been advancing therapies for a wide range of major diseases and extending and improving lives. So, you know, perhaps the most widely talked about advancement has been the introduction of drugs by Novo Nordisk, which is international, Eli Lilly, and some others, and they're tackling obesity. And so there are life-threatening health problems linked to obesity that are being addressed by some of these treatments. And some of these have been introduced in the recent years to treat and manage diabetes. And in decades past, diabetics had to prick themselves several times a day to test the blood sugar levels and determine whether they needed to inject themselves with insulin. And so medical device companies like Abbott Laboratories and Dexcom have developed continuous glucose monitors that track blood sugar and deliver insulin through a pump. There's another company, Boston Biotech firm, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, which developed a therapy for the treatment of cystic fibrosis, today is working on a cure for type 1 diabetes. So I think the AI feeds into this as well and is helping to advance some of this, you know, these treatments.
Yeah, and as we continue to advance in the genetic sequencing, that's allowed some of these bio companies to develop gene and cell therapy cancer treatments, which to compete with more of the traditional treatments, like, you know, we hear a lot about radiation, is in general a good thing. Some of the Japanese pharmaceutical companies have been developing a class of cancer therapies called antibody drug conjugates. These are genetically engineered to target cancer cells while leaving the healthy cells alone. So it's not just killing everything, which could be, you know, really good for sure. Us in the medicine. So while innovation is an essential driver of the value of the healthcare sector, not all of these innovations will succeed. And that's where we as investors, we have to consider other factors, right? Including potential of the company and their overall pipeline of developments, right? Is their product good? The quality of its management and the potential for the market of the said medicines.
Yeah, so I mean, five very positive things going on. So the key is, as an investor, is stay focused on what matters. Make sure you're diversified, you have a plan. I mean, distractions and discouraging news are always around us. There are always challenges we're aware of and unknown setbacks that will occur throughout the year. So bad news can certainly drive market volatility in the new term, but company fundamentals drive long-term value. Let me repeat that, because that is so important. Market volatility can be driven by news in the short term, but company fundamentals drive long-term value. And so investors who remain focused on their financial objectives will be better positioned to participate in long-term investment opportunities when they arise. And obviously, past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Mm. But I mean, that one statement, the company fundamentals, what companies are doing, is so important. And, you know, that really ties into our question of the week is, you know, I'm scared about the upcoming election. We hear that frequently. You know, everybody wants one candidate to win or one party to win. Mm. And if the other party wins, you know, the economy is just going to go down. Well, that's not how it works. And so the question is should I go more conservatively based on the upcoming election?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. The bottom line to this is optimism is required, right, when investing in the market and thinking long term. What the data would show is that there's actually no correlation. I know we talk, John, to clients a lot about this. Is there's actually no correlation in market returns and the presidential election year. And what I mean by that is actually a majority of the years for election years are positive, so much so that the only two that are negative in the past 80 years are 2000, which was the tech bubble.
Yep.
And then the other was 2008, which was the housing crisis. So
yeah,
no real correlation in that. And having that optimistic view long term that markets have always recovered. And that just because we're coming up on an election year doesn't necessarily mean a negative year in the market.
Yeah, and if a candidate has certain policies, companies make adjustments. I mean, when Trump did the tariffs to China, we just read about how companies had to source from other places. I mean, they've now gone to Mexico. So, and also, we're painting our bedroom, and we're out buying paint at Lowe's, and you know, the company fundamentals drive long-term value. So paint, now a very simple product, but they now have a paint. It's Valspar, and I'm sure other companies have it as well. It's a color-changing paint, ceiling paint, and you put it on and it's purple, and it changes to white, and you put it on as purple so you can see what spots you've missed.
Whoa.
And that's just kind of cool technology, but it's new products, it's new technology that these companies are making that is driving the profits, which then drives their stock price higher.
Yeah.
So very simple example, but I was like, man, purple. I don't know if I want to put purple paint up there, but it does change to white. I'm sure it does. But we got a simple paint's expensive.
Paint is expensive.
A gallon was like $60.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
They'll get you.
So the labor's free, though. So yeah, Tame and I are doing it ourselves. So anyway.
Good question of the week.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. And then we're going to do a final topic here about are you prepared to overcome the financial impact of a natural disaster?
Yeah, that's right. This comes from Kiplinger and a little bit of a shorter article, but I do think it's relevant as we enter summertime and We do have, you know, typically summer and early fall hurricane season for us on the coastal areas and even out west with tornadoes and just something to think about. So we start here by hearing from clients, you know, I never thought it would happen to me, right? We often hear this from people who suddenly find themselves the victim of a natural disaster. You know, we have the wildfires and earthquakes out west, hurricanes in our neck of the woods, winter storms in the northeast, and so on and so forth. The U.S. is littered, right, with these weather disasters. So what do we do financially to prepare for those? And we see here from the National Center for Environmental Information that in 2018 alone, this is a big number, John, the cost of weather catastrophes in the U.S. alone was $91 billion with a B.
That's a big number.
Yeah. So that was actually only the fourth highest total in a single year, with the others being from 2005, 2012, and 2017, even higher and reaching $100 billion. There. So just very large numbers and something to think about financially. So for an individual or a family, the price tag of a natural disaster can be shocking, particularly for those who have extensive property damage. You know, we just went through this with my parents. They had to put on, you know, a new roof when that storm came through. These things can be expensive. So here are some steps that you can take to help rebound financially. If and when the weather-related events are in your area and may impact you or your family?
Yeah, the first step is make sure that your financial records are protected. I mean, you got to look and make sure that your financial and estate planning records are in order and kept in a safe place. So keeping them in a file drawer probably is not the right place, not secure. If your house burns down or is ravaged by a flood, it's going to be destroyed. So waterproof and a fireproof safe maybe provide better protection. Another option is obviously to keep those copies of the important documents in a safe deposit box at your bank. So in addition, any vital information saved on a computer should be copied on a external hard drive or thumb drive, and it can be stored safely or be, you know, easily accessible to you through remote cloud storage. I will say financial records storing and making sure they're secure is important, but make sure your loved ones know where you put those.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, if you put them in a jar in the backyard, you know, make sure you tell your kids about it. So
that's right. That's right. And the second item here is keep building that emergency fund. So many people think of an emergency fund as money that you need when maybe there's a household emergency, right? Your HVAC goes out or there's a medical matter. But it's also critical in the event of a natural disaster. If you need to evacuate your home and live in a hotel for a few days, or maybe even a couple of weeks, having money on hand to cover those costs is important. So such expenses like that can add up. So make sure you have at least 3 to 6 months worth of income set aside in an emergency fund and an easy to access account. Consider a savings account, a high-yield savings account, a regular savings account to earn interest, or maybe even a money market where you have check writing privileges or ATM access. So earmarking these funds outside of your day-to-day spending and long-term investments is just so that you're not tempted to spend those, right? That's what we want you to use your emergency fund for. But with this in particular, it's important to build that emergency fund. And in an extreme situation, cash may be difficult to access, right? We talked about that earlier. If power's out, ATMs aren't working, you may want to keep some of that cash in a fireproof safe at your house. And having that cash on hand will help, you know, hold you and your family over during the initial couple of days of that emergency.
Yeah, another thing that you want to make sure that you have the right insurance coverage. So if you're listening and you haven't looked at insurance coverage recently, reach out to your agent and just make sure, you know, can you rely on insurance to cover property losses if you have a major disaster? And it really depends on the nature of the event that does the damage. Flooding typically is not considered covered damage under most basic homeowners policies. So, for example, if a hurricane created a flooding condition that damaged your home, it might not be covered. So that's a major risk. You know, the studies show that 1 inch of water can result in about $27,000 worth of damage. Wow. And so you may be reimbursed for some of that damage if you have the flood insurance policy. So, you know, an insurance review can be a good place to start to determine the state of your coverage. You know, what kind of protection do you have? What will the replacement cost of your home be covered? Vehicles, personal property, there's a lot of things you need to just double check on. Insurance is one of the most important tools to help you overcome any losses from a natural or man-made disaster, and sometimes specialized insurance. Flood coverage may need to be explored as well. So make sure you have good coverage in that area.
Yeah, that's right. And as we end this article, the basis is just knowing that preparing for these things really does make all the difference. So any type of natural disaster, whether we're talking about hurricanes in the south or tornadoes and wildfires out west, it can take a toll on your financial life in the short and in the long term if you have to pull from investments to fund some of these projects. So having a financial plan that accounts for these type of events could help ease some of the burdens that may go on during the panic of one of these natural disasters. So yeah, good article, quick article.
Yeah.
I think it's relevant.
Yeah. It's a lot of times people don't think it's going to happen, but you're right. It's happening everywhere. We see it on the nightly news, certainly.
That's right.
So, prescription of the week this week is, looking at ways to save for college. A couple of ways. ESA, education savings accounts, is a reasonable option. You control the investments in that. Typically, you can also use a 529 plan, which is a state sponsored. There are some tax benefits from a state standpoint, in South Carolina and Georgia. So those two are pretty tax efficient, but once they're in there, they have to be used for schooling. There is a new provision in the 529 that if it's been open for 15 years, the proceeds can go into a Roth IRA. So that's a pretty neat option. So those two are, you know, driven by college expenses. A lot of our clients are opening brokerage accounts in their names. It can be used for college, not as tax efficient, but complete liquidity and flexibility associated with that money. If they don't go to college or they need a car, house, whatever, you can use it for that. And then the final one is a custodial account. That's in the child's name. Again, you can use that money for anything associated with the child. So a couple of different options there. It really depends on what the goal of the parents or grandparents are. But those are the different ways of saving. So if you have any questions, certainly reach out to us. We're happy to help you with that.
That's right.
And it's been a good session,
yeah.
Justin.
That's right. I've
been a lot
it.
Of fun. Yeah, we'll listen to this many years down the road and reflect on what a good session it was.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
But this has been this week's edition of Money MD, and tune in next week on moneymd.net to hear more prescriptions for your financial health. Check out our website, moneymd.net, or send us your questions at Richard Young Associates, and you can give us a call at 706-739-0725. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. None of the information contained in this broadcast is intended by the host to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. All hosts are representatives of Richard Young Associates, a registered investment advisor.